Welcome to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. Let's get today's show started with your host and founder of the BD Academy, Rob Brown.
And welcome to the show, and I'm delighted to have with me today the legend that is Alan Fitzgerald. Alan, good day to you.
Oh, hello, Rob. I haven't been called a legend, well, at least since 3 o'clock.
Alan, you are a legend, but for the benefit of people that don't know that, tell us a bit about your background and your expertise.
Sure. In essence, Rob, for the last 19 years or so, for my sins, I've been working in the accounting software industry here in Australia. So focusing on areas like practice management, tax and accounting. I then spent about 5 years with Thomson Reuters in their corporate tax space. And that obviously includes corporate tax, transfer pricing, indirect taxes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then just under 3 years ago, I set up an advisory practice to assist both commercial organizations and accounting firms navigate the various applications that exist out in the marketplace and get them the best solutions from an independent perspective for their business.
Would it be fair to say, Alan, that the accounting software world and even the accounting world is quite murky at the moment? How would you describe where we're at?
Oh, look, I think the evolution in the last couple of years in particular of the cloud platforms has certainly here in Australia has shaken the cages a lot of the incumbent players who have been very much the embodiment of legacy platforms. Mm. So you have the arrival of the single ledger platforms such as your QuickBooks and your Xeros, and then the ancillary applications that sit around that has just totally revolutionized the whole marketplace.
And the profession itself, how would you describe where that's at?
The challenge for a lot of the firms is the traditional role that accounting firms have, which is the anxiety transfer expert. So the ability to have a client that's sweating bullets coming in going, I don't know what to do. What should I do here? And it's the there, leave it to me. I'll take care of it has been replaced for a lot of firms, but it's not every firm, obviously, but for a lot of firms with the 4 inches of screen that everybody holds in their hand, because as Richard Susskind really nicely points out, he said that the demystification of accounting through the use of cloud apps down to the mobile phone level has changed the way that accountants must observe the world and have to observe the world.
Mm. I love that analogy. And anxiety transfer, I've not heard that before. Where does that come from, Alan? What does that exactly mean?
A very simple example, if you're my accountant, Rob, and I am a startup, in essence, I started a business a couple of years ago, and the old way of doing things was I would walk into the accounting firm because you guys speak a different language to the language that I speak. So accountants are very binary in the sense of the books balance, the books don't balance, it's right or it's wrong, it's black or it's red. And it's a scenario for me living in the analog world, which in this great Australian expression of it's close enough is good enough. If I make a mistake, I know that the accountant will help me fix that up. And it's that anxiety that if I know that I potentially have stuffed up in some particular way, I know that I can transfer my anxiety to an expert, which is it sits in the chair opposite me, which in this case is Rob Brown, to be able to say, Rob, how can you help me with this? Is it going to cost me my house? And Rob looks over and he says, there, Alan, don't worry too much about that because this is what we'll do and so forth. And Alan then leaves that office going, dodged a bullet there. That's what I really talk about, that anxiety transfer. And I think that is still relevant in the advisory space, very much so, to a lesser extent now in the compliance space, but it still manifests itself in that arena as well.
There's a lot of buzz around advisory versus compliance, the death of compliance, the automation, the AI, the bots, the digital. What's your view on that, Alan?
The compliance will never go away. I think the ratio of compliance to advisory is changing, and that comes down to a lot of the demystification of accounting practices. Because, give you an example, I use QuickBooks myself, and I've got it on my phone. I can just go in and make an expense. I did it today. I traveled here, this is what it cost. This is who I paid, and the machine, in inverted commas, takes care of the rest of it in the background. So, from a compliance perspective, once I hand my books to my bookkeeper, she tidies up the inappropriate allocation of that particular expense. I might have put it against entertainment when it should be transport. Then it just goes over and it's easy to import into a tax engine to lodge a tax return. That's the new way. The old way was a whole box of receipts and the accountant would sit there for hours, if not days, going through and allocating the proper receipts to the various entries in their own data system. So the compliance component of it, the more the automation comes through from the end user doing a lot of the work, the bookkeeper tidying it up and then importing that information, that's where the compliance industry is changing. And it's then the opportunity for the accounting firm is to say, well, Alan, now that we're no longer spending, you know, X amount of hours on your books, what are you actually doing with your business and how can we help? Because you know what? This is what we do every day and we see a lot more people than just you. So accountants don't live for one client, they live for a whole bunch of clients. And it's the experiences that they have from that wide array of industries that opens up the door to offering the advisory services.
Mm. Alan, you're established in Australia, but you do work all over the world. What differences do you see in, say, the US, the UK, Australia, when it comes to accounting software and how they're growing their firms?
Great question. What I've certainly learned is that if we take it one step further from Australia, you look at New Zealand. Now, New Zealand is a really interesting territory. For many years, I was in the computer chip business and I would come from Australia and I would go to New Zealand and I would be stunned to find that New Zealand was about 2 years ahead in the computer chip business. And what you see then also is, for example, the rise of Xero, the ability to test a product in a small environment so that even if an error is made, it's not going to dramatically affect a large group of people. So it gives them the ability to road test an application, for example, and then launch into the Australian market and then launch into the global market. And that's exactly what Xero are currently doing. What I've seen is that Australia and New Zealand are generally about a year and a half, maybe 2 years ahead of everyone else in the world, because we've gone through the old, you must have a suite to compete, to the best of breed model. And then in the US and the UK, you've got a best of breed model, but they were never integrated. Here you can have a best of breed model that is integrated. And that's the difference. And I think you'll find in the UK, particularly with the Making Tax Digital regime coming in soon, you'll find more and more of the applications becoming more and more cohesive. But we've had a lot of that cohesiveness here in Australia for many years. So that would be my fundamental difference.
Yeah, we get a sense of that here, that you guys down under are blazing the trail and we're just playing catch up. So what's coming up?
I guess the use of AI across big data. Big data is a term that's been bandied around for donkey's years. And really what it means is just a whole bunch of information. And what we're finding here in Australia is that accounting firms are sitting on tax information, for example. So an individual firm might have 1,000 clients. They've got all of this tax information sitting on their clients, but they have no way of accessing it. And so the newer tax applications are actually allowing the ability to interrogate that tax data. So this is information that the firm already has, and that move from, yes, I know I've got data here in my system, but I've no way of accessing it, to now I've got a whole pile of data. What do I do with it? Well, if you throw an AI layer on top of that, it allows you to interrogate it in a more intuitive way and actually gives you information and starts to pull out trends of what can be done. And so what we have over here is Xero, for example, publish what they call the Small Business Insights. And that's where they sanitize a couple of 100,000 data sets from within their ecosystem. So all of the ledgers that there are split across the country of Australia, they sanitize that information so they can actually drill down to the suburb level and say within the suburb of St. Kilda, which is where I live in Melbourne, the average debtor days are 45. The trend is that people are hiring in St. Kilda. So this is information that is faster than the Australian Bureau of Statistics can generate, because that any kind of census data takes several years to analyze. They're publishing this information monthly.
You mentioned their integration, Alan. Software providers used to position themselves as a magic bullet and our system is the only one you need. How much is that changing now in terms of them needing to talk to one another to really help the accounting firms?
I think the best of breed approach is definitely changing. I used the phrase earlier of you have to have a suite to compete, and that was typically the way that the software from the major vendors and even the minor vendors was sold, to say, look, we've got everything. We've got practice management, tax, accounting, corporate compliance, and it all sits off a single database and you'd be crazy to go anywhere else. Issue is, because the Australian market is actually quite smaller, the capabilities of designing the best of tax program, the best practice management system, all for roughly the same price was just not feasible. And so in those old suite, you know, close enough is as best as we can get. So you never got the best result out of it. So moving forward into the current climate, you can have your choice of 650 plus different applications that suit your particular particular industry or and or your particular firm with what you need once you've done the evaluation, obviously. So you get the best of those solutions. But it also gives you the flexibility. And this is the key thing, is that if in 6 months time, it's not doing what you wanted it to do, or there's something better, the cost of change is a lot less than what it used to be.
Yeah, and the risk of going down one road versus another road too is mitigated.
Absolutely. The key thing, and this is one of the frustrations that I get with the accounting firms that I deal with, the choice of the software that they look at is often based on a view that they've had of that software from several years earlier. So, for example, I looked at that a couple of years ago and we worked out that it wasn't for us. Well, software changes so quickly these days, cannot have that blinkered view on from a historical perspective.
Yeah.
Alan, what separates the good firms from the great firms?
Look, I would think the willingness to be open to new ideas. You might present a piece of software, and software does X, Y, and Z. And the response will be, oh, look, that wouldn't work for us because we're a different accounting firm to all of the other guys. And actually, no, you're not. And so the ones that can get out of that mindset and actually say, we actually want to see what is possible, not necessarily to embrace that and go forward with it, but actually to be receptive enough to new ideas. There's complacency amongst the legacy vendors here in Australia. That complacency sometimes flows into the accounting firms as well. And it's kind of like the security blanket is there. So they have been our vendor now for 15 years. They'll do the right thing by us. The issue being that a lot of those firms are quite profitable, but they're not necessarily as profitable as they could be. And I think that's the big difference.
And drilling down to the individual accountants themselves, what would you say separates the good accountants from the great ones?
Well, from the years that I've been doing this stuff, and this is like over, and certainly from my advisory business, but also from just my experience, the firms that do it really, really well, so the people in the leadership environments, they typically don't have as high a turnover of staff as the ones that don't do it as well. The biggest, I don't know what it's like in the UK, but right here in Australia at the moment, the biggest catch cry is it's really hard to find quality staff. The way I look at that in some respects is that someone can interview really, really well, and they'll come into an organization and they'll start doing really, really well. But if that organization, they're not necessarily providing the environment, and I mean the environment from a technology perspective, that meets the expectations of those staff members, they'll move on. This is the big change that I'm seeing. The old thing of, oh, never tell your salary because someone will find out. Just go down to pub. You know, people will say and compare, what do you want? What are those guys like to work with? I don't know if it's still around, but there used to be a website called Glassdoor where staff could put anonymous reviews of organizations. And that was where people used to go to take a look at saying, I want to work for accounting firm X. They'd go on that site and look for accounting firm X and see what people wrote about it. And so they could actually see, I am here and this happens in this firm. Now, I'm sure that a lot of partners don't know that that exists. The difference from the staffing perspective is it's becoming increasingly harder to hold on to these people. So it's imperative that partners listen to what's happening within their staffing.
I saw a great quote from someone from Intuit recently that said, your brand is not what you say it is or what you claim, it's what your customers say it is. So it's all out there, isn't it?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I did a posting on LinkedIn might have been this week where I spoke about corporate memory, because when your corporate memory is so intrinsic in how your business is represented out into the marketplace, and the concern that I have with a couple of the people that I've met over the last 6 months is that it's patently obvious that that organization, and I refer to one in particular, not by name though, they've completely lost their corporate memory because they have such high turnover in their staffing. It's because the staff are going out, or it's in the sales perspective, sales are going out to the accounting firms, and the accounting firms are cutting them to shreds. And they're coming back in going, why is this not working? Because our marketing department is saying, we've got the best products, and we've got the best future. And it's like, guys, you've completely forgotten what's happened over the last 25 years, and they're getting torn to shreds when they go out there. They have no corporate memory.
How has the way firms grow and win business and stand out changed over recent years?
The accounting firms, they're realizing that they can be more of a holistic operation to a business. So they can do their compliance side of things. They might be able to do their audit from a different division, or that might be, you know, separation of church and state, so to speak, or they're the advisory. So what I'm seeing in some of the bigger firms is definitely the case of doing the compliance, the advisory, and the audit teams all talking to one another. So when there's an opportunity or there's an issue, there's good communication across the various divisions. And I think that's the key thing. I met an advisory partner who said, when I get a lead from one of our other divisions, my close rate is nearly 70%. That's huge. That's just on a lead from the tax team saying, mate, can you go in and have a chat to these guys? And he said to the group, it's 70%. You give me a lead, there's a 70% chance that I will close it and will earn more money for the firm. As one big four partner said in a group meeting, which sent shudders through the assembly, was maybe we should stop hiring the best and brightest and hire people that can actually talk to our clients.
Yeah, there's a strange way of looking at it. It might catch on.
Yeah, I don't know. I think everybody just had a big gulp when they heard that.
Alan, do you see yourself as a disruptor and an innovator out there, or do you see yourself as a comforter of people that are feeling disrupted?
I guess I rattle a few cages, but the benefit that I have, having been so many years in the profession, is basically I can empathize. And so I know the history, and that's very important to a lot of the people that I deal with, is that it's understanding it, not having to repeat or sharing old war stories.
Do you see any bad advice or poor doctrine being dispensed out there, Alan, that really gets your goat?
Look, I've seen it amongst the classic example of it last year, which really frustrated me, where it wasn't so much a bad advice, it was naivety, and it was one of the add-on partners to the Xero ecosystem. And I had done a project for a large firm, and where I recommended that they look at particular applications, like one of these add-ons. And they contacted this particular add-on because of the research that I did, it was the one that was perfect for them. And they basically said, look, we know that you only give a 2-week trial. Can we have a 2-month trial? Because we have X thousand clients that we want to put through the system, and they will become your clients. So, you know, the opportunity is massive. And long story short, the salesperson said, no, you have to buy the product. And the accounting firm went, okay, bye. And they called me up and they told me, and I went, are you serious? Because to that vendor, it was probably, without rough numbers, probably $350,000, $400,000 annually that would have just been delivered to them, because that was the process. So I think if any of your audience mentoring startups, they definitely need advice on commercial reality and the commercial way of doing business, because I think they're fantastic at doing the ones and zeros and the conceptual idea of coming up with ideas, but possibly not, and I have to use this underline, possibly not getting the best from a commercial acumen in order to do the expectations. So a lot of the app providers are I don't want to be ageist here, but they're younger, and a lot of their clients are older. There's definitely a gap, and what I'm seeing certainly in amongst the larger vendors is the recent adoption particularly in 2018 of the gray-haired army. They need older former BDMs or former customer service agents to basically come in and empathize with the clients, because there's so much stuff going on. So someone who's non-budgeted, so they don't have a target to meet, so they're not hunters, they're actually just farmers and just being nice and sit down, have a coffee and work out how best to engage the clients, as opposed to the full-on aggressive sales tactics.
Mm-hmm. Well, whose job is it to win work in a firm, Alan? Are you of the school of thought that it's everyone's job, or it's the job of a few key partners or a BD-stroke marketing department?
Great question, because I've seen a variety of approaches in that space. I think everybody fundamentally is selling the benefits of their firm, and that relates then directly to the turnover of the staff. I mean, it's one of those things that if a staff member isn't happy, they're not going to be advocating the firm for when they're talking to their clients. I know of partners that are non-chargeable partners, so they're the original partners of the firm, and they just go out and meet and greet the clients so that they don't have any targets, and they flip the work back over the hedge to the teams to do that work, so they're very much a figurehead. And then you have the firms that are proactive on social media, on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, all that sort of things. They don't look like accounting firms, if that makes sense. They're different from the old wood paneling offices and so forth. They've got, there's one crew in the city in Melbourne. They're famous for the architecture that they have in their offices. So the way that it's approached in the marketplace is very different by different firms. But I think fundamentally everybody needs to sell.
We have a firm like that here called PKF Cooper Parry that are often called the Google of accounting firms here in the UK, because they are just like a software company, jeans and foosball machines and table tennis tables, that kind of thing. And it really disrupts the conventional view of what accountants should be.
Well, that's it. And I guess a lot of those guys are also looking at the scenarios of getting away from the time billing, the 6-minute increments, because there's been recent surveys done here where, they polled, I think it was 750 small businesses, and 54% of them, their biggest gripe was time billing. You know, it's like the 6-minute increments. They're quite happy to pay the bill. They want a value-based outcome. Mm-hmm. And so they want a fixed bill from their clients, so they know, from their accountants, so they know what they're going to be getting. If I go to a surgeon, say for an appendectomy, because everybody needs to go and get an appendectomy these days, the surgeon will tell me how much his fee is going to be, how much Medicare, our government supported medical, like the NHS, he'll actually give me a figure. So it might be, let's call it $1,000. And I know that if the operation takes 10 minutes, it's $1,000. If the operation takes 3 hours because there's some kind of complication, it's still going to cost me $1,000. I can't go to an accounting firm and say, this is what it is. How much is it going to cost me? Because they'll go, oh, we'll just do it on 6-minute increments. It could be 1 hour. It could be 24 hours. But the medical world, who are taking bits of my body out, can actually tell you how much it's going to cost. And I think that's fundamentally the big thing that has to change in this industry.
Yeah. Thank goodness for the value pricing revolution. It is changing the way accountants think about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's more focusing on the output rather than the input.
Alan, this has been terrific today. Tell us as we close up, what do you love most about what you do?
Oh, look, I think the compliance industry has been probably the most wonderful industry for me for the last 20 years. I've met some extraordinarily fantastic people, mentors, you name it, everything has been in there. And as someone asked me the other day, they were trying to encourage their son or daughter to get into the industry. Like, why would I encourage my son or daughter to get into the industry? And I just said, if your son or daughter likes technology, the compliance industry and the accounting industry has got to be one of the most dynamic industries when it comes to software change, because the vast majority of the tools that are used within an accounting firm change every year by at least 30%. So there's all of this compliance updates that simply have to go to be done year on year. You cannot lodge a 2017 tax return using 2013 software. But you can still find accounting firms, certainly in Australia, that are running Office 97 because they don't keep up to date with that stuff. And those guys they'll drop off the edge of the cliff at some point. It's an amazingly dynamic industry. And I just love it a bit, Rob.
It's great to hear your passion, Alan. And if people want to chat to you more about what you do, how might they reach you?
Yeah, easily is LinkedIn. So it's Alan with one L, Alan Fitzgerald on LinkedIn. Just there'll be a bearded man on the photograph there. I'm on Twitter. So I've just changed that today, actually. So it's simply @Fitz_AU, FITZ_AU. My website, the easiest again, is Practice Connections. So all the way you think it's going to be spelled, so there's no silent Q's in there or anything, or it's just practiceconnections.com.au.
Great. And Alan, would you leave us with a call to arms, if you like, a best bit of advice for accountants listening that want to raise their game and really make a difference in the future?
Oh, look, go out, talk to your peers, talk to the market, talk to independent people like me, happy to shoot the breeze anytime. But it's really keep an open eye, keep awareness open, and continue to be that anxiety transfer expert for your clients.
Alan Fitzgerald, that's been world class. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much, Rob. Thanks for inviting me to be on.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.